We're holding on page 110 in Tinus, Oyslamidalin. The Mishnah talks about, it's near the beginning. The Mishnah talks about you have the series of fasts that you have if it hasn't rained in time. First, you have the Yechidim, which means the Talmid Chachamim fast. Then you start having the Tzibur fast. So the Gemara deals with the issue of what happens, for example, if a person comes from a place where they're not fasting and he's visiting a place where they are, and let's say he, or for that matter, even if he, and let's say then he, so he forgets and eats. He's supposed to join in with them in the fast, but let's say he forgets and he eats. So the Mishnah says, so the Gemara says, in that case, then fine, they should still continue, at least in public, to keep the fast and not like show off in front of everybody, like I'm from someplace else and I don't have to fast with you. So that leads the Gemara into the following thing that we find that a person should not show off in front of others when they're inside. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Yaakov Lavanav, Lama Tisro?" Yaakov says to his sons during the famine, "Why Tisro?" Now Rashi on the pasuk mentions a couple of possibilities. Rashi mentions the explanation that the Gemara brings over here. Then there's another point Rashi says that it may mean also, like, why are you looking hungry? But anyway, here the Gemara is taking it Tisro, Maloshin Taru, showing yourselves off, meaning Omalahem Yaakov Lavanav, Al Taru Atzmachem Shatim Sveim, don't show yourselves as being satisfied, as being full, Loi Bifnei Esav, Loi Bifnei Yishmor.
Bottom of page 110.
Yes, well, now we're on top of it.
Of that, I couldn't find.
Okay, now we're on top of page Nun Ravian. And not in front of Yishmo, so that they don't get jealous of you. So therefore, so we see, in other words, by the same token, a person shouldn't be showing off, look, I can eat. I'm not part of your community and part of your fast, when in fact, when the rest of them are fasting. Now, why are we mentioning now, first of all, Rashi mentions it means, in other words, that so really they still had lots of grain. When they first went down to Mitzrayim and then they met up with Yosef and everything started developing from there, they still had plenty of grain at the time. The reason why they went in the first place is because Yaakov is telling them, don't show off that you have lots of grain so that Esav and Yishmael don't get jealous. Why Esav and Yishmael? So there's many, many different explanations. Maharsha discusses some of them over here. One point being, so first he brings that. So first, actually, the Maharsha brings in some detail over here about the other explanation of Rashi that al lama tisro, that it means why are you being hung? Fakert, it means why are you being hungry, and he relates it to a word in Mishlei for that. But anyway, but here the Gemara prefers the explanation that it means don't show yourselves off. Anyway. So why Esav and Yishmael? Maharsha first brings from Ramban. The reason is because now the question really is why Esav and Yishmael, who did not live in Eretz Canaan themselves, why not in front of the Canaanim themselves who live in Eretz Yisrael? So first he brings from the Ramban that Esav and Yishmael maybe would travel through Eretz Canaan to get to Mitzrayim, and the Rum, the Mizrahi, and Chumash doesn't like that because for one thing, well, why would they? If anything, the land of Esav is south of Eretz Yisrael, to the direct route to go to Mitzrayim wouldn't pass through Eretz Yisrael, it would pass through the desert over there. The Yishmaelim themselves live in the desert, even close to Mitzrayim themselves. Al pnei Vayishkenu Mechavila Ad Shur Asher Al pnei Mitzrayim. So they're fairly close to Mitzrayim as it is. They certainly don't need to detour through Eretz Yisrael. So he brings from the Mizrahi that the rest of the people of Canaan also had grain, so therefore there's no reason for them to be jealous. But Maharsha says that doesn't really fit so well either. Then he gives another explanation, which is because Esav and Yishmael are the relatives of the Jewish people, so therefore they're more likely to say, you know what, we're our relative, we're your relatives, why don't you have Rachmanus on us? So that would be why he's mentioning that. Then you have the Kli Yoker gives another point that Esav and Yishmael, because of their past history with Yitzchak and Yaakov respectively, would have more reason to resent the Jewish people. They would consider Yishmael would consider that Yitzchak took away his atzlacha. He got all of the brachos and everything from Avraham, and Esav would feel the same way towards Yaakov. There's a sicha in Chelek Chaf where the Rebbe, I think it's in Chelek Chaf, where the Rebbe analyzes this whole issue in great detail and explains that none of those no, still all of these reasons that we're saying all have various questions on them. And the upshot is the Rebbe explains that what it means is like this: Yitzchak, Yaakov's sons figured, you know what? Listen, when Avraham was faced with a famine, he didn't go, he ended up going to Eretz Mitzrayim, but not because he figured it was a good idea to, because Hashem basically put him in a situation where it's impossible that otherwise. Yitzchak, the same thing. He went to Eretz Plishtim for the same reason. Why should we do that? Better let's stay put, and we'll have betochan, and the Eibishter will provide for us. Maybe not even, like Rashi is saying, they still have plenty of grain. Maybe they are, in fact, starting to feel a shortage of it, but nevertheless, they're not going to go without, unless they're really driven to it. But Yaakov is telling them, Fakir, Yishmael and Esav are very well aware of what Avraham and Yitzchak did respectively, because after all, it's their respective fathers. So they're going to be jealous of you. They're going to say, why are you acting in that way? Why don't you follow your own ancestor's example and go down to Mitzrayim, and therefore you should go for that reason. And then Rebbe goes on and develops the point at the end of that sikha over there that also represents the point, the ruchnius, that the grain of Mitzrayim represents all the chokhmah that they exported to the whole world. In those days, Mitzrayim was one of the world centers of science and knowledge and technology and everything. Bnei Yaakov have no business having to go for that. It's fine for the goyim. It's not necessary for us. But in this case, the Eibishter arranged things that in the end, they need to go there. And that was the beginning of Golos Mitzrayim. Anyway, but that's the point is, that's why we're mentioning specifically Esav and Yishmael. Speaking of Yosef's brothers and instructions that they were given, so later on, you have after the reunion with Yosef, then Yosef tells them when they're returning to Eretz Yisrael to pick up Yaakov and their families, he tells them, Al tirgizu badorech. Now, what does that mean? Amar Abelazar, Amar lahem Yosef la'echav, means Yosef is telling his brothers, Al tisasku b'dvar halacha. Don't get involved in learning matters of halacha, shematirgaz aleichem aderech, because the road might then become angry or agitated for you, meaning, in other words, you're going to end up losing your way. You're going to get so far tiffed in your discussion that you're going to end up losing your way. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, he mentions this point, but he also mentions in the simple meaning that it also means that they're like this. Yosef knows, you know, now that they finally met up with Yosef and they found out the whole story of what happened after they sold him, they're likely to be having recriminations and then guilt tripping one another. And Yosef warns them then not to do that. But here the Gemara is saying that he's telling them, "Al tisasku b'dvar halacha." What? Al tirgizu. They're going to get enmeshed. Okay, fine. Okay, fair enough. Okay, fine. So Tosfos actually brings from a medrash that says differently than what the Gemara is. Here, the Gemara is saying al tisasku b'dvar halacha. Don't get involved in matters of halacha. Tosfos brings from a medrash that says on the contrary, al tafsiku b'dvar halacha. Don't interrupt from learning halacha. In other words, continue learning halachas on the way. So first of all, Marsha again discusses it over here and discusses the two explanations in Rashi and then what the Medrash says, the idea being, in other words, he explains also now the word tirgaz can mean to be agitated. In most places in Tanakh, actually, where you have the Shodesh Resh Gimel Zayin, in later Lashon Kodesh, it means anger. But in classical Lashon Kodesh of Tanakh, most of the time, it means to tremble. So literally, we mean the road shouldn't tremble or be agitated for you. But Marsha points out that it also has the meaning of roiges as an anger. As we learned earlier in the Masechta, when Talmid Chacham has a fire of Torah burning in him, and that makes him more prone to get angry when things are not being done the way they're supposed to. Therefore, Yosef has extra reason to warn them, you are, it's true, you're traveling on the road. You're putter from most mitzvahs because you can't do them on the road. Talmud Torah, you're still chayiv in on the road, but be careful that you don't do it in a way that's going to agitate you and that's going to make you lose your way. The Rif also points out an angle on it as well, that since we know that Yosef told them the last halacha I learned with Yaakov before we parted was Egla Arufa, so now they're going to be discussing the matter of Egla Arufa, and they're going to realize how serious it is, the Aveda of bloodshed, and that itself is going to make them start with these recriminations and these guilt trips one on another, and therefore Yosef is warning them, be careful not to do that. Now, here also there's a sikha where the Rebbe analyzes this and goes through these. You have over here the Gemara. You have the version of the Medrash as we have it is different than the way Tosfos has it. Tosfos has al tafsiku midvar halacha. The Medrash as we have it printed has a little differently, more similar to what the Gemara says over here, that they should not al tafsiku, don't interrupt from halacha, but rather the Medrash has a different wording to the effect, similar to our Gemara over here, that they shouldn't get enmeshed so much in halacha. So the Rebbe discusses the Sicha in Chevet Lamed Hei, Lom the Shasicha, where the Rebbe talks about the idea. In other words, there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah in general, and then you have that. Yosef doesn't have to tell them, same way he's not telling them to do any other mitzvah. He has to specifically be giving them instructions that are relevant for the road particularly. So therefore, one way of looking at it is that on the road particularly, as the Gemara is saying over here, don't get involved in discussions of halacha because you're going to get too involved in it. You may lose your way. On the other hand, definitely learn Torah because you have a mitzvah of learning Torah. So one way of looking at it is the Medrash is taking the view you have a special mitzvah of Talmud Torah on the road more than you do any other time, and therefore the Medrash uses that phrasing that you should. And then you have, on the other hand, Tosfos's version of the Medrash, al tafsiku midvar halacha, would be on the contrary, that within learning Torah itself, you have a lower level of learning, and you have a higher level of learning appropriate to Talmud Chachamim of high caliber, as the Shvatim were, and by learning that kind of thing, by learning halacha of that kind on the road, adrabba, it'll make them more into a chefza of Torah, and therefore it'll mean that they'll be going to be more protected on the road than they otherwise would, because their whole mitzius, their whole reality is going to be that they're learning halacha, which is for them the highest level of learning Torah. On top of that, also, actually, there's an explanation. There's an explanation from Lev Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, that talks about that really what Yosef is telling them. The Gemara is going to go on to make a distinction over here between different aspects of learning Torah. So he explains what Yosef is telling them: don't be so involved in Nigla, rather when you're traveling on the road back to Yaakov, then be involved more in Nister, be involved more in Pnimiyas HaTorah.
Are you able to back out of the deal?
He says you see that from the continuation of the Gemara. So let's learn the next few lines, and then that'll be a little clearer. So the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? Now, the Gemara is assuming that when Yosef is telling them, Al tis'asku b'dvar halacha, it sounds like he's telling them to avoid learning, at least on a high level altogether. So the question is, Aini, is that so? V'omer abiloi b'rabberechia, shnei tamar chachamim sh'mahalchim b'derech, when two tamar chachamim are walking on the road, v'ein meinem divrei Torah, and they're not learning Torah between them. For those of us, by the way, who are learning Masechta Sota, doing Sfira, this also is in tomorrow's daf. So if they're not saying words of Torah between them, Ru'uyim li'sarif, they deserve to be burnt. Shenema, as we find by Eliyahu and Elisha, when Eliyahu is going on his last walk together with Elisha, and he's about to be taken up to Shemayim, the pasuk says, "Vayhi hema hochim holich v'daber," they were walking along and talking. And then there came a chariot of fire and horses of fire by a fridu ben shneim that separated between the two of them. Now, the point is, timed the ikadibur, because they were talking in Torah, therefore the fiery chariot and horses separated between them, but didn't burn either one of them. Implying if they weren't talking in Torah, and that means, by the way, Mephoshim say, even if they're learning Torah for themselves, but they're not talking about it between the two of them, then they would have deserved to be burnt, and the fiery chariot and horses wouldn't have only taken Eliyahu up to Shemayim, it would have burnt the both of them. Tosfos brings a different explanation from the Medrash Fakir. They were talking Devarim B'Teirim. They were talking not words of Torah, and that's why Ru'uyin Lisarif, and that's why they were confronted by this fiery chariot and horses. Now, obviously, we're not going to say talking Devarim B'Teirim. They're not talking about the weather or the latest sports scores or something. We can imagine Eliyahu and Elisha are talking about great things, but whatever it is, it's not on the appropriate level of Torah that they should have been doing. It might have been, for all we know, Eliyahu might have been explaining to him what it means to be a leader of the Jewish people. It might have been that because he's going to be taking over as the next one, might be he's explaining to him what he needs to know as far as what's going on in the government over there, who knows. So whatever, obviously it was something of great import, but not comparable to learning Torah.
The only one says that, you know, walking on the way, you should talk Torah.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's like a bula.
That's it.
So how could it be that it's going to mess them all up if you're going to learn on the way?
So that's what the Gemara is asking. How can you say, how can Yosef be telling the brothers not to learn Torah on the way? And the answer is, like Kasha, hola migras hola iuni. It depends whether you're talking about reviewing migras, like girsa, just reviewing on a more superficial level what you already learned. That's fine. And that you should do. You should learn Torah on the way, because that won't make you lose your way. You're not going to get so enmeshed into it. You're not going to get so deeply involved in it that you're going to lose your way. Holy uni.
A
as opposed to liyuni, as opposed to delving in deeply, then you're likely to lose your way, and therefore Yosef is warning them not to do that. Now here, in Reb Levi Yitzchok's explanation, he says the other way around, that lemigras refers to, so he understands that the lemigras, learning on a more superficial level, not really superficial, but something which is in a way easier, refers to, he says, refers to nigla. It refers to Pnimiyas Satura, where it's more, in a way, it's more straightforward. You don't have questions and answers and whatnot. As we know, the Alter Rebbe mentions it, brings in from the Zohar, and you get a Skobov, the less Talmud like Kasha, whatever, there's no Kashas in it, whatever, you're learning on a more straightforward level. It's as it was given, right, by in the Zohar and in the Sfarim after that, and therefore you don't have to delve into it that deep. Whereas Leiyuni would be more as far as learning Nigla, where Taka, you have to delve deeply into it. I think that's what he says. Actually, I may have that backwards. And actually, what he says is that Lemigras means to learn means that you shouldn't be learning Nigla, but rather Leiyuni Chasidus Pnimiyas HaTorah, where you have to delve more deeply into it and understand how all the courses in the world. That's something you should do on the way. So there's the opposite of what we're saying, that Leiyuni is not what to do on the road, but rather Leiyuni is what to do on the road. That's something more appropriate for the road, is to be delving into Pnimiyas HaTorah. So that's one explanation of what Yosef means when he tells them Al Tirgus about Dorach, is there's a certain area of learning that they should stay away from while they're on the road.
Wait, we learn they have to stop.
What do you mean they have to stop? They don't have to stop. They can be learning while they're traveling. They can be learning while they're traveling. Especially, they may not even be walking after all. They had their junkies with them, although Pashas, they were using their junkies more to carry the grain rather than to carry themselves. But still, in fact, in that sicha that Rebbe brings from now to Rebbe, that, yeah, if you're traveling in a wagon, for example, and you have a wagon driver driving you, or, you know, the equivalent nowadays would be you have a chauffeur, or maybe if you have a self-driving car, then by all means, you should be learning on the way. So there is that distinction. So yeah, it's true. In the case of the brothers, it's true. Not necessarily were they being carried, the Pashtos. On the other hand, the truth is that Rebbe actually points out in the Sicha, when you get down to it, it says over there, Yosef sent with them wagons, and the Pashtos, we're not just talking, he sent the wagons, the Pashtos, he sent slaves together with the wagons to help transport everything. So therefore they would have transportation. So there is more reason that they could actually manage to learn on the way and not be so distracted. But nevertheless, the Gemara is saying there's a certain kind of learning which is appropriate for the road, and a certain kind which is not. So here, yeah, Reb Levick explains that's what it is. So when it's nigla, because you have, there's all the argumentation in it and going all the back and forth and discussion back and forth, then that's something you could easily get distracted on the road and end up losing your way, as opposed to Pnimiyas HaTorah, which is more straightforward. Then therefore, he explains that's what it means. So the Gemara called lemigras literally means like to scan it. That's referring to nigla, which refers to things in our world that we can scan, that we can lemigras, we can look at them superficially with our eyes and see what they are. As opposed to le'iyune means Pnimiyas HaTorah, which is something that you have to delve into and understand what it is. But on the other hand, there's no kashas and terutzim in it, so therefore it's not the kind of thing that is going to be a problem for them on the road. The Gemara continues, Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa we learn a different meaning of what Yosef means when he says, Al Tirgus Ubadorach. And he says, Al Tafsiu Psia Gasa. He says, it means don't take extra large steps. Vachnisu Chamala Ir, and make sure when you come into a town on the way that you come in while it's still daylight, while the sun is still in the sky. So Al Tirgus Ubadorach would mean don't rush on the way, as in you're going to try to rush to go faster with larger steps than normal. And it means that, and it would mean therefore that you're gonna try to gain a little extra time. We'll travel a little bit into the night, and that way we'll save time tomorrow, and we'll be able to go faster. And of course, now Marshall points out, why didn't Yaakov give them these instructions when they're going down to Mitzrayim? Why is Yosef first giving them when they're leaving? And he says, because after all, he knows they want to get home as fast as possible. He himself told them, Maharuva alu alavi, hurry up and go back to my father. So therefore, he has more reason to warn them, yes, you should hurry, but on the other hand, take these things into consideration. So why al tafsiu psia gasa? What does it mean, don't take large steps? The reason is, because we learn in a braisa, psia gasa netelos echa mechamesh meyas mima'ur ein of shal adam. Large steps take away 1/500th of a person's eyesight. Now, Tosafos asks the question, does that mean a person takes 500 such steps, he's going to be blind? So Tosafos says a couple of possibilities. One is the first step takes away 1/500th. The second one takes away 1/500th of what's left. The third one, 1/500th of what's left from that, and so forth. You actually have something similar to that, a mathematical kind of thing similar to that in today's Shlosha Prokim of Rambam, the Abba Halacha, that under certain circumstances, 10% of the Nechosim are supposed to be earmarked for a girl, or when a father passes away and he leaves children behind, the sons inherit the property, but the daughters are entitled to 10% under certain circumstances, 10% of the Nechosim to use eventually for their wedding expenses. So then you have a din that if you have multiple daughters and then they're one after the other, the first one gets 1/10, the second one gets 1/10 of what's left, and so on and so forth. So it's a similar kind of thing to here. It's called the Siraisa de Rebbe. So here it's the same kind of thing. It's 1/500th of what's left each time. Mathematically, it comes out after you'd have 500 such steps, a person would have lost approximately 60% or so of his eyesight. Anyway, that's one explanation. Actually, Tosafos says, what? People run in the park? I don't know. But anyway, Tosafos says another possibility is that no, the first step has that effect. It takes away 1/500th. Afterwards, though, first of all, kolas cholas koshes, as we have in connection with Matan Torah, where Hashem tells va'ata im shamaya tishmu b'koli. Now, if you listen to my voice, then it'll become easier as you go along, because kolas cholas koshes. So the same way, the first step has the worst effect, and afterwards, a person gets used to it, and therefore, it doesn't necessarily have such an effect on his eyesight. So maybe that could answer your question. The people who run in the park, they lose the 1/500th the first time, and that's that. With that said, also the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a person can regain that from having the wine of Kiddush and Havdalah. There's a remez, they say in that, that the word ner is gematria 250, and the two neris of Shabbos, therefore, is gematria 500, representing that it restores the 500th of the vision that was lost. There's an explanation from the Kli Yoker in a Sefer Olal Esifrayim that the deeper idea behind that is when a person has taken large steps, it means that it represents the point that he thinks, Koichi va'otzem yodi, he thinks all my strength and all my business acumen and so forth is making things successful for me. That takes away his ability to see what the truth is. Then when he stops for Shabbos, then he realizes that means that he recognizes that after all, the Eibishter runs the world, so that restores, that gives him back the proper perspective on life. Anyway, so therefore, getting back to the Gemara over here, so Yosef is warning the brothers not to take large steps because it's going to impair their eyesight. When he tells them, "Bachnisu chamalair," when he tells them, bring the sun into the city, meaning in other words, come into the city when you're on the way, when it's still daylight, the reason is, Kedir Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. The reason is based on what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, the Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, La'olam yetze odem b'kitoiv v'yikonis b'kitoiv. A person should always leave town with kitoiv and come in with kitoiv. You should make sure to leave only when it's light outside and come into the city when it's still light outside. For a few reasons, Rashi says, first of all, robbers are not going to be around because they usually prowl at night. Second of all, a second reason would be because there can be all kinds of potholes and obstacles and whatever on the road, which he might not notice at night. And the third reason, Rashi says, is if he comes into the city at night, they might bring false charges against him. They might trump up charges against him and say, what are you doing coming into the city at night? You're a thief. Or you're a spy or something. Whereas if he comes in during the daytime, then that forestalls all of those possibilities.
The nighttime in general is a time of shading.
Right? It's a time of shading as well. So actually, there are other places in the Gemara. There are places in the Gemara where it says specifically a Talmid Chacham shouldn't go out at night. Where here we have the Gemara saying that in general, a person shouldn't go out at night. So Marusha refers over here to a discussion about it in Masechta Cholin. Tosafos explains over there that the difference is a Talmid Chacham shouldn't go out at night at all, whereas for a regular person, it's more when he's going out far away from the city. If he's just walking the streets of the city at night, for a regular person, it's not so bad, but for a Talmid Chacham, the Gemara elsewhere explains the matter of Gnai. People are going to think that he's going out for illicit purposes, and Marusha discusses that further. And then in light of our Gemara over here, because after all, the brothers are Talmid Chachamim, so it's not just a matter that they shouldn't go out into the middle of nowhere at night. It means that in general, they shouldn't be going out at night b'chlal because of this matter of Gnai. But on the other hand, that's really only an issue if he's going alone, and here there's a bunch of them together. So therefore, the two Gemaras kind of mesh together in that sense. Okay. There's a story in this connection. I think I may have mentioned it in this shiur before, which the Medrash actually tells on this pasuk of Habor. The pasuk says Haboker O, when it was morning. Shenema actually, as the pasuk says, Haboker O, Hanoshim Shulchu, when it was morning, when the light was morning, then Yosef sent off the men, and that's when. And then afterwards, he told Menashe to chase after them, and there was the whole thing with the silver cup. The point is, he only sent them off in the morning, in keeping with this idea that they should only leave with Kitov. The Medrash actually tells a story in that connection where. There was an innkeeper who had a whole scam going. People would stay by him overnight. He would wake them up in the middle of the night and offer, you know what, I'll escort you a little bit of the way, and that way you can get a head start on the next leg of your trip. Meanwhile, he was in cahoots with a group of robbers nearby, so they would pass by there. The robbers would come and attack them. The innkeeper would pretend like, oy vey, what did we get ourselves into? They'd rob the whole group. Afterwards, he'd go after the people would go their way, robbed of everything they have, and meanwhile, he'd get together with the Ganovim and split the loot. So one time, the Medrash says, a mayor was staying in this inn, and when the guy comes to wake him up in the middle of the night, the mayor realizes what's going on over here, so he doesn't want to tell the guy outright, you're a Ganov, I don't want to do it. Instead, he tells him, I can't leave, because I'm waiting for my brother. Oh, your brother? Okay, well, good. I'll get two for the price of one. Where's your brother? The mayor says he's in the Beis Medrash. What's his name? Kitov. So the guy goes to the Beis Medrash and starts yelling out, Kitov, your brother mayor is waiting for you. And then nothing doing. And eventually it comes the morning and he realizes the whole plan is shot. He comes back to the mayor. He says, your brother wasn't there. What are you talking about? The mayor says, he is here. What do you mean? The light is here. Vayar the kimasa or Kitov. So that was the Kitov that I was waiting for.
Was it a Tuesday?
I don't know if it was Yom Shoah Kitov, but yeah. Anyway. Okay. The Gemara continues. Omer of Yehuda, Omer of Chia. Hamahalach baderach. Speaking of traveling on the road, which Yosef's brothers are doing, when a person is traveling on the road, al yoichol Yosef mishnei ravon. A person should not eat during that time more than he would eat during years of hunger, which actually the Gemara brings in a few lines that during years of hunger, a person should anyway be eating less than he usually does. And first of all, in order to save on food, but for other reasons as well, as the Gemara is going to say. So therefore, when a person is traveling, he should also not eat very much. My timer, hocha tagimu hiu, meaning in bubble, they explain the reason is mishum mayon, because of his stomach. You don't want him to get an upset stomach by eating too much, and then he's going to be traveling. Rashi says, first of all, mayona can just mean the kishkis, the mayov. Second of all, the word mayona literally means a fountain, so it can mean that one part is going to be pouring into another one, like a fountain. Rabbi Nachmanel says similarly, it means partial person may end up suffering from diarrhea if he does that. The Ma'arova Amri in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they gave a different reason, mishum mizoni. The reason is because he may run out of food on the way. What if he eats all his food beforehand and now he has nothing left for the rest of the trip? So the Gemara says, "My benayo." What's the practical difference between the reasons? First of all, ikka benayo de yosef ba'arba. First of all, if he's sitting in a boat, so then you don't have the issue of you don't have the issue of mayona because he's not actually walking, but he may get seasick. But that's another matter. After a couple of days, he'll get used to that. But you do have the problem of mizoni. He may run out of food on the boat. Another possibility, if he's traveling from one inn to another, he's not going, let's say, on a trip across the desert where there's going to be nothing there for a week or something. He's traveling every night. He's stopping at an inn. So then there'll be plenty of food, although he won't run out of food. But there is going to be the problem of mayona. If he's traveling on foot, then he still has the problem of an upset stomach. So the Gemara tells, Rapapa called Parasa, Ochel Chodarifta, Rapapa, when he was traveling, every Parasa that he traveled, he would eat one loaf of bread. Kasava, Mishum Mayona, he held the main problem of why you shouldn't eat too much on the road is because of Mayona, because of stomach problems. Now, Rashi says two explanations. One is that he was a Baal Bosser. He was a heavy set person, so therefore he didn't have much to worry about that as far as an upset stomach. And in fact, Rashi says he was b'chlal. He wasn't worried about an upset stomach, but we find in the Gemara in Bava Metzia that he was a very physically large person. So therefore, he had much more of a capacity for food. So therefore, it wasn't like so he could eat a lot without it bothering him. Unlike most people, if they ate that amount, it would give them an upset stomach. Him, it wouldn't. In fact, there's Gemara in Pesachim. We learned some months ago, there was a story over there where one time Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua ate with Rapapa, and Rapapa ate four times as much as Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua did. So we see he had a big appetite. So therefore, see, he could eat like that and it wouldn't bother him.
A parsa and a mile.
A mil is 1/4 of a parsa. A mil is 2,000 amos, which is around 3,000 between 3,000 and 4,000 feet, give or take. And a parasa is four times that, so somewhere around 2.5 to 3 miles. Bapashtus, we're talking about Rapapa, was traveling on foot. But maybe not. Maybe he was traveling on an animal. If he was traveling on foot, then to walk a parasa, would the Gemara tell, we learned in Psachim that the average person can walk approximately 10 parasa in a day. So a parasa, officially, we say of the amount of time it takes to walk a parasa is 72 minutes. So it would mean that every that often he's eating. If he was riding on an animal, then the pastures, it would be closer together.
Is that 72 minutes is the amount of time it takes to digest the food?
That's basically what it is. It's considered to be the amount of time it would take to digest, right? The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kol Amariv Atzman B'Shnei Ravon. When a person starves himself during years of famine and he doesn't eat as much as he normally does, Nitzol Mimisa Mishuna, he gets saved from an unusual death. So Mimisa Mishuna, Rashi describes anything which is not through the regular Malakam Mavas. A person passes away normally on his bed. It could be from some kind of sickness or whatever, but still, that's not considered Mimisa Mishuna. Anything else, or the sword or hunger or whatever, would be Mimisa Mishuna. So like this, a person starves himself doing Shnei Ravon, then he's saved from that. In the schus of that, the idea is in the schus of the fact that he's joining together in the tzara of the tzibur, and he's not acting as though I'm better than everybody else, then therefore the Eibishter saves him from that. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Berov Podcha Mimavis. The Pasuk says, in famine, he saved you from death. Now the question is, what do you mean from death? Merov Mibarilai. It should say that Hashem saved you from hunger. During the hunger, during the famine, Hashem saved you that you're not hungry. So Maharal Shah discusses over here, it's not that the Gemara means, in other words, that it should have said, instead of Bira'av, it should have said Me'ra'av. That's not the point. The point is, rather, that it means that it means that, why are we saying, why is he saying Bira'av Podcha Mimavis? He should say Bira'av Podcha Me'ra'av. In the time of famine, Hashem saved you from famine, that you didn't go hungry. The context is the pasuk is talking about that when a person is acting the way the Eibishter wants him to, then Hashem protects him from all kinds of disasters. And this is one example. So why is it saying mimavis, as though fine, you're not going to die from it, you're not going to die from starvation, but nevertheless you're going to be hungry. If you're talking about how the Eibishter is going to protect the person, then say he'll protect you from being hungry in the first place. That's what it means. In the schar of the fact that a person because of the hunger, because you impose hunger on yourself at a time like that, therefore Hashem saves you from death. The person gets saved from dying an unusual death. So that's where we learn this concept. So one point, it's Yosef makes one point is because that way he's joining with the Sada of the Tzibur. Another point is because then he's what is he doing with the extra food? He's obviously not throwing it out. He's giving it to the poor people who taka don't have any food. So therefore, for those reasons, he has the schus to be saved from Misa Mishona. Another point is also because he's acting against his teva. The nature would be that when you have, you don't know where your next food is going to be coming from. You're going to try to take whatever you can right now. He avoids that. Therefore, midah keneged midah, from that, he gets saved from the natural thing. Might be at a time like that, many people are going to die, but he gets saved from that. And in this connection, the Gemara continues, Amar Reish Lakish, Also, la'odim l'shamash mitosav v'shnei rabban. A person is not allowed to have relations during years of famine. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yosef yulad shnei bonim. The pasuk says two boys were born to Yosef b'terem tovei shnas harav, before the year of hunger came. Now, the point: why does the pasuk have to inform us it was before the year of hunger to tell us that it was davka like that? Because once the years of hunger came, then he wouldn't have been allowed to. Tana, however, we learn in a brisa, chasuchei bonim, people who are deprived of children, mishamshin, mitesen, mishnei rabin, they are allowed to have relations during years of famine because they need to have children. So there is actually, first of all, Tosfos points out that we know Yecheved was born as they were coming into Mitzrayim. By the time they came to Mitzrayim, 2 years of a famine had passed. There should have been another five, but then Yaakov came and the Nile, and he gave Pare a bracha, and the Nile rose, and the famine was over. But they had 2 years of famine before that. So by of necessity, therefore, Yecheved was conceived during the time of famine. So how could they do that? How could Levi do that if the Gemara is saying over here you're not allowed to? So Tosfos says it's not really osu. When Reish Lakish says osu la'odem, he doesn't mean actually osu. He means the midas chassidus. So Yosef followed that midas chassidus. Levi did not. Well, the question obviously is, what is Levi not chassid? Does he not follow that? So Marsha brings various other answers from different Rishonim and different Achronim that talk about that. One possibility is Levi had not yet been Mekayim Pru Avu. Here the Gemara is saying Chasuche Banim, people who don't have children at all. By that time, Levi already had children. By the time they came down to Mitzrayim, he had Gershon, Kohos, and Merari. So at least one of them was born before the 2 years, was conceived and born before the 2 years. But nevertheless, he didn't have Gurul yet then, because Yecheved was Bepashtos, his only daughter. So therefore, he hadn't been Mekayim Pru Avu. So that would be more of a heter. That would be more of a heter to do it. But then the question is, Yosef also didn't have any girls. We don't find that Yosef had any girls. So Ben Yehoyada says maybe actually he did and they're not recorded, but still it's a little bit of a doicha. Marsha brings another possibility. He brings from the Beis Yosef that if the difference before and after Matan Torah, before Matan Torah was Mutter, and really that the Pasuk is bringing, that the Gemara is bringing a proof over here from Yosef is only an Asmachta. But Marsha says it's a little difficult to say that either. So he ends up saying that actually what it is that the Beis Yosef mentions, and it's brought ultimately in Shulchan Aruch, there are various heterim when you are allowed to have relations, b'shnei ravon, and one of them is when it's leil tevila. When it's the night, the wife goes to mikveh, then that overrides this thing of osir l'shamish b'shnei rabban. Well, very well then, Yocheved could have been conceived on the night that Levi's wife went to the mikveh. Yosef went the extra mile with midas chassidus, and he didn't even do that. Then he brings also other answers. Yosef they figured they didn't know where Yosef was, but fine, wherever Yosef is in the world, he's only one person. They don't all have to hold themselves back from Tashmish because of one person. Whereas Yosef, on the other hand, given that as far as he knows, the rest of the family is suffering from hunger, then he would have more of a responsibility to stay away from that. So there is a Marshal also goes on to mention from Mizrahi that after all, we find Yitzchak was having relations with Rivka during the time when there was a famine. Okay, first of all, it might not have been during the famine, and it might have also been, again, there's no other Jews at the time who are suffering from it, so therefore it's not such a problem. Anyway, here also there's a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes this whole point in great detail, and actually here also you have an explanation from Rav Levi Yitzchak that analyzes this on the basis of a Zohar. The Zohar makes the point that Yosef held himself back and did not have relations during the Zohar says, if a person does, here the Gemara is saying that a person is not supposed to have relations during the time of famine, the Zohar has an expression on it that if a person does, then he's going to have children, he's going to have bonim zorim, like children that have a certain affinity to klippus. They're going to have a certain affinity to the unholy side of things. So Rav Levik analyzes it in detail in the Lashon of the Zohar over there, and he explains basically Yosef knew in advance that there was going to be years of famine coming up. Therefore, he knew when they were going to be starting. So not only did he time things that he's not, so not only did he not have relations during the time of famine, which the Gemara is saying if he was outright ulcer, and not only did he not have relations with his wife even after she was pregnant, where you have, there is, after all, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that relations during certain trimesters of the pregnancy are good for the baby. Even that, he held himself back. But not only that, because he knew when the famine is coming, he timed it that they would be born before the famine begins. Nobody else would be able to do that because they don't know when it's going to begin. But Yosef did. Based on that, the Rebbe explains in the Sicha and analyzes Rashi's wording on the Gemara, on the Pasuk over there, where Rashi quotes this Gemara with a slightly different wording, that the gist of it is that we're saying a person is not allowed to have relations the Shnei Ravon, when there's years in plural of famine. Well, Yosef knew that there's going to be years plural of famine. Therefore, the Gemara is learning from him that you have to hold back from that. Levi and the rest of the family had no way of knowing. They, as far as they knew, it's a one-year, it's a one-time thing. It's a one-year thing. So they had no reason. It's not even a matter of midas chassidus or not. They had no reason to hold back on the basis of that.
3 months are the best for the baby.
The best 3 months are best for the baby. Even the middle 3 months is also good for the baby, but it's not so. The Gemara mentions in Nida that when the couple has relations during the pregnancy, it's beneficial for the certain parts of the pregnancy. It's beneficial for the baby. Anyway, there's a sicha there in Chelek Lamed, I think, where the Rebbe analyzes this whole point in great detail and explains this Gemara and the Rashi on the pasuk in light of Rav Levick's explanation of the Zaya over there about what Yosef was doing in terms of planning when his children are going to be born, so that they shouldn't be bonim zorim, as the Zaya calls them. But again, Levi wasn't bound by that at all, because as far as Levi knew, he had no way of knowing that there was going to be a 7-year famine. As far as he knows, it's a 1-year thing, and based on the expression over here, b'shnei raven, then he has no reason to hold back for that. That's another possibility as well. We did say before Lomachi Siro, that why are they, that they had food, right? So there is that factor to consider as well, right? That's partially what Marsha is bringing. One of the possibilities is that as far as they knew, the only Yid outside the family who's suffering from hunger is Yosef, and he's only one person, and that's not reason enough for all of them to hold back because of him. Mashenkin Yosef, as far as he knows, the whole family is suffering from it, and therefore, yeah. So in any case, the point in Shulchan Aruch does mention you have various hakerim for this, among other things. Here the Gemara says chasuchei banim. You also have the point when a person hasn't been mekayim pruvu, and you also have on mikveh nights. So there are certain exceptions there. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula, Dalad 7. One of the main chidushin that we're going to have in Yomos Mashiach relative to Matan Torah is the nisuin. The Medrash phrases it like this, like you have a king was Makadish a woman, and he wrote out for her a document that he's going to give her a small amount of gifts. Then when he comes to actually do the full marriage, then he gives her lots of gifts, like a husband. The same way in this world, there's only Erasin, the Erastich Li La'olam, we had in this past Shabbos' Aftarah. So therefore, Hashem only gave us the moon, Chodesh Azalachem. L'mos HaMashiach is going to be the actual Nisuin. There the Pasuk calls Hashem, Bayalayich, Meloshin Baal, your husband. And then at that point, Hashem is going to give us everything. As the pasuk said, that the wise ones will be as bright as the glow of the sky, and matzdikei harabim, those who bring righteousness to the many, will be kakechovim, like stars. So the Rebbe explains in a sicha, in other words, the great yichud, the great unification of the Jewish people with Hashem, where we're nisuin, where we become one, v'hoyu levoser echad, is limos HaMashiach. Then we have, as the pasuk says, v'hoyu or elavonim, v'rachama, that the moon will be as bright as the sun, and then at that point, it will be fully revealed and to everybody's view that Yisrael v'arayis of v'kutra v'rach v'kulachan. Continuing with halachas on Shabbos, we were talking about halachas of making noise on Shabbos. So what kind of noises you are and aren't allowed to make on Shabbos, like in terms of clapping and door knockers and things like that. So here's another one. You're watching, for example, you're watching Paris or things like that to prevent animals or birds from getting to them. You're not allowed to clap your hands or slap your thighs or do other things like that to scare them away. The reason, like you do on weekday, the reason is because then you might pick up a rock and throw it at them, and then you're going to be throwing from Rishus to Rishus. The Alter Rebbe actually says maybe nowadays that we don't have it. Rishus Adam and Gemara, that nowadays many of our Rosh Hashanah Abims are really actually a caramelist, which is why on some of them it's possible to make an Eruv. Maybe you can be Makel on that. Would that apply in New York City, where many, if not all, of our streets are indeed Rosh Hashanah Abims, at least according to our Rabbanim? That's another question. I don't know. There's not a lot of well, that's also true, yeah. Okay. And a related din to that is not really in connection with noise making, but in connection with things. With playing around with things, you're not allowed to play with nuts or other things like that on ground, even if it's paved, even if it's tiled. But if women and children are doing that, then mutav yoshogim v'al yomizidim. They're not going to listen anyway, and it's only an issu d'rabbanan. So therefore, so leave them, leave well enough alone.